From Entrepreneur Media, this is Problem Solvers, a show in which entrepreneurs do what entrepreneurs do best, solve unexpected problems in their business.
We were completely wrong.
And I'm just like, it's not selling.
It was like, we have to start from scratch.
I'm Jason Pfeiffer, the editor-in-chief of Entrepreneur Magazine.
During this pandemic, people have chosen two distinct paths. Some have tried to go small, to basically hunker down, shrink their business to the essentials, and try to ride this thing out. Others have gone big, seen this as a moment of potential massive opportunity where everything could transform for the better. Or
this could have been the death sentence for the company, right? Is that taking advantage during the emergency. If you fail, you can lose your way.
That is John Berkowitz, who went for it. All or nothing. Transformative moment or death sentence.
My name is John Berkowitz, and I'm the co-founder and CEO of Ojo Labs.
Ojo Labs is an end-to-end home buying and selling platform, and I will explain more about what that means in a minute, but for now, here is what you need to know. Ojo Labs is 4 years old, and it's been doing well, but it had been a small player in a very large space. And last September 2019, John spotted an opportunity to speed up his business significantly.
I'm in my backyard getting ready for theoretical paternity leave to have my fourth son the next day on September 17th. And I have a conversation with the CEO of a large real estate website.
That website was called Movoto. It describes itself as the second largest 50-state fully licensed online real estate brokerage in the U.S.
And in this conversation in my backyard, I come to realize a crazy idea that there is an opportunity to leap our company forward by acquiring this business.
Now, this is a crazy idea for a couple of reasons. First of all, Movoto was doing great. It wasn't really looking to sell, nor did John have the money to buy it. And of course, as he said, his wife was going to have a baby the next day. It would be their fourth child, which means his life was about to get even busier. But the more he thought about it, the more he thought, this idea is so good that it's worth the insane amount of crazy that goes with it, which was a lot of crazy.
When I pitched it to my CFO, it sounded so crazy. We needed to buy it with money that we did not have. We then needed to do it with nobody knowing, because if I could buy this asset, I'm a very small player in the space. All of the huge publicly traded companies, if I could get such a good deal on it, would 100% also want to buy it. So I wouldn't be able to let them know. At first, two of those people were also our investors. So I had to somehow lock this in before putting my investors in the uncomfortable position of wanting to compete with me on it. I would then have to go raise money from a tenth of the available market because most investors have large real estate investments. And if you go to an investor, they're like, that's a great deal. I'm not an investor in you, but I am an investor in X. So they should do it. The company was owned by a company in Japan, and in Japan, business is done in a deep relationship and in person. And so I was going to have to fly to Japan, build a relationship and trust in a very small window, and do this all from Austin, Texas, where fundraising is a little harder than being on the coasts. My co-founder also had a previous business relationship that made this a little bit harder and more hairy to be a part of. And so I had to cut my other half off and make sure he knew nothing about it. When I pitched it to my CFO, it sounded so crazy that we decided we would consider it and that it should be named Mission Impossible. When you're naming projects, you don't want it to be too obvious. And so we changed it to Tom Cruise, and then we're like, that's a horrible name. And so then it ended up being named Cruise.
Project Cruise would have been crazy during any time. But again, remember, this is something that John starts pursuing back in September of 2019. And deals like this don't happen overnight, which means that although he didn't know it back then, he would eventually be trying to pull together a Mission Impossible situation while a pandemic alters absolutely everything around him. The impossible mission becomes more impossible, if that's even possible. But he did it. He pulled this insane thing off. He raised $68.1 million during a pandemic. And the story of how he did it is a story of great perseverance, and even more importantly, about the surprising benefits of being ambitious during a crisis. So that is the story we are telling today. It is John versus the pandemic in a quest to pull off Project Cruise. And it's all coming up after the break. When you're running a business, you are constantly solving problems. And what you definitely don't want to do is create problems. And you know what creates problems? Complicated systems, QuickBooks, spreadsheets. You don't need that. It's time to upgrade to NetSuite. Stop paying for multiple systems that don't give you the information you need when you need it. You can ditch the spreadsheets and all the old software you've outgrown because now is the time to upgrade to NetSuite by Oracle. It is the world's number one cloud business system. NetSuite gives you visibility and control over your financials, HR, inventory, e-commerce, and more. It is everything you need all in one place instantaneously. So whether you're doing a million or hundreds of millions in revenue, save time and money with NetSuite and join over 22,000 companies using NetSuite. So how you do it? Let NetSuite show you how they'll benefit your business with a free product tour at netsuite.com/problem solvers. Again, schedule your free product tour right now at netsuite.com/problem solvers. One more time, netsuite.com/problem solvers. All right, we're back. So before we dive into this journey, let's orient ourselves a little bit. So John Berkowitz is the co-founder and CEO of Ojo Labs, which has built a platform to allow consumers to do everything related to home buying and selling. Search for homes, list homes, ask personalized questions, engage with the digital advisor, and so on. Basically, it helps people at any part of the journey. And here is why John really wanted to acquire Movoto.
It was like, it really is just perfect because what we had been doing up until this point in the company is building this end-to-end super personalized product. And we had taken extreme measures over a four-year period to deliver kind of all the things a consumer needed across the home journey. The one thing we were missing was millions of consumers. And we had kind of long 2 to 3 year plans to go build a direct consumer brand to bring those consumers into the platform. This was a solution to just accelerate that and basically make value of everything we've done over the last 4 years.
But of course, as you heard before, it would be treacherous. Still, John was very much up for the challenge, which would turn out to be twofold. Challenge number one was finding the money. John needed to raise a lot of money. And challenge number two was building trust with Movoto, a company that wasn't exactly looking to sell and was never exactly sure if John was going to be able to afford to buy them. So we're going to take this story in those two parts. First, we're going to talk about fundraising, and then after that, we'll talk about dealing with the target company itself. Now, fundraising. The way John tells it, this pitch of his was not exactly a VC's dream. Most VCs don't want to come in for an acquisition, he says, and Ojo Labs was a small player looking to make a big deal. So even in pre-pandemic times, this was turning out to be a hard pitch.
Which meant that we kept having nice conversations, but they were not going great.
Even John's own investors were not really interested in funding this at the start. They were supportive, but they had other things to focus on, and this acquisition just didn't seem like anyone's top priority. So John just had to keep pitching and pitching. He ultimately did about 150 pitches, and through it all, he was getting more and more excited about the potential of this deal, but also having to juggle a lot of new information.
Literally every one of those 150 pitches was different because after every pitch, I received new feedback from the one prior, but I was also learning more about the company while also evolving my thinking about how those companies came together.
Months go by like this. And then February 2020. Now, most people think that COVID began in March in America. That's when lockdowns began, at least, and when life really started changing. But for John, it all started a month earlier. That's because he has a team in St. Lucia, and the prime minister there was on to the dangers of COVID way earlier. So John was hearing this prime minister talk, and he started realizing something big could be coming. But of course, back in February, most people thought that was just crazy talk.
I just made the internal decision where I was like, if I'm right, and I don't do anything about it, I will regret that for the rest of my life. If I'm wrong and I do things, then I was like a little bit crazy and like, we'll just get over that and be back to normal. And that's actually pretty good anyway, because nothing bad happened.
So on February 7th, John sends an email out to his entire company at Ojo Labs, basically saying, This might be an overreaction, but we want to protect our people in the case that something really bad is about to happen. So we are shutting down offices, we're implementing safety measures, and we are starting to plan for best and worst case scenarios. And one of those scenarios, not that most people knew this because he was keeping this whole thing a secret, but was fundraising. Because, you know, he'd had like 150 meetings with investors, none of which had landed him a significant investor. And now he's entering completely uncharted territory with the world about to change in ways that he couldn't predict. And as the rest of America started to catch up to John and realize that this pandemic was going to be a real thing, indeed, investor calls became a lot harder.
Most of those meetings went something like this, like, hey, super excited that I got connected with you, but we have a bunch of other portfolio companies that we have to weigh in on. And so we aren't doing new investments right now.
But as all of this is happening, John is remaining surprisingly optimistic because he's doing more and more due diligence on the company that he wants to acquire. And he is seeing something that none of these other investors seem to be seeing. It is opportunity. Big, big opportunity.
I got more and more conviction because the company continued to do better. It was a real estate search site. So as people started to think about, oh my gosh, like my New York shutting down, San Francisco shutting down, real estate search just continued to explode. And so this company was doing better than anybody else in the market. They were capitalizing as a lot of great smaller players can do, and they were growing faster than they'd ever grown before. So the company just keeps getting better for me, even though the options keep shrinking. And I think I just mostly ignored that it was impossible and just kept reaching for straws, working on introductions, taking crazy introductions that seemed like there's zero chance that person would be a good fit, and just kept plowing on.
During all of this, John's been keeping in close contact with one of his existing investors who'd become his closest confidant during this process. And that investor could just tell, John is not going to give up here. So the investor wanted to help him out and eventually made an interesting introduction.
Which was Wafra, which is the fund that manages a large portion of the Social Security money of Kuwait. It is not your typical venture capital investor. They typically do big real estate investments. They have kind of 270 people in New York City, so certainly not on paper to be a good Austin investor.
And a fact worth knowing, John and Ojo Labs are based in Austin.
They never made an investment in Austin, except for they had a LP investment in one of our venture capital firms, and one of their employees was an Austinite who I found out happened to be living in Austin, and that was the chief investment officer. And so there was this moment of, huh.
When John explained this, I said it reminded me of that classic line from Dumb and Dumber.
So you're telling me there's a chance?
And John said, yeah, that's basically right.
It was very Dumb and Dumber. The analogy that I gave was that the story of the bumblebee. Do you know the story of the bumblebee?
I don't think so.
If you line up a bumblebee and a squirrel and like several other animals that don't fly, and you give them to a scientist with no knowledge of their ability to fly, they would look at the bumblebee and say, like, fat body, tiny wings, like zero chance that thing can fly. Turns out what you and I know is the bumblebee can fly really well. It's an incredible flyer. The reason the bumblebee can fly is because it doesn't know all of the facts that the scientists know. It just wakes up in the morning and flies. I was blocking out all of the rational like reasons why this couldn't happen. Everybody that would ask me, what are the odds that this is going to happen? I would say, like, if I look at all the data, it's probably like single digits. We have a shot at this. But if you ask me, is it or isn't it? I believe it's going to happen. And it was mostly just you're saying there's a chance.
Because now there's this one guy in Austin who might be interested. Although, ironically, that didn't really matter that he was in Austin. Because even though they were in the same city, and even though John would have loved to show this investor his cool office space, these were pandemic times. This pitch would happen remotely. And so John just went for it.
I think at this point in the pitch, it wasn't probably much of a pitch. It was like, here's the deal. It's a crazy situation. It's an incredible value because my story on the value at this point was pretty damn refined because the company continued to kick butt. I understood it more. I had a vision for how we were going to come together that was, from an investor standpoint, genius. And I didn't play games. I basically said, I don't have any premium investors. I have some kind of, my strategics can probably hobble together and help me pull this off. I have debt that I could probably pull this off, but I don't have great options, which meant like he smelt value. And I just showed kind of 100%, here is where I am. We're going to go do something. It's going to be massive. I don't have a lot of alternatives. If you're open to it, I think there's an incredible win-win. And I think the transparency in that pitch, where he was able to really see who I was, who we were, and all of the facts with zero BS, gave a pretty big competitive advantage, because their perspective was, there is opportunity in this, right? They had the view of, there's going to be wins where we can sneak in, get great deals, and come out with outside outcomes. They were not like a lot of investors that were saying, we need to hunker down, batten the hatches, and survive. And I think I gave ruthless transparency into our business, my thinking, just because I was kind of in Hail Mary mode.
Long story short, it worked. And once this lead investor was in, many others followed. And John got his money. But like I said, this is just one part of the story, because while John is trying to line up this money, he's also dealing with a company in Japan that is not entirely sure that he is going to be able to round up the money. So how did he handle that? That's the other side of the story, and it's coming up after the break. If the year 2020 taught us anything, it is that the old ways of doing things are not working. Believe in People by Charles Koch offers a better way. Believe in People is the book that Netscape founder and famed investor Marc Andreessen called, quote, a clear path to success for anyone who wants to make a difference, end quote. It is a deep inside look at the principles of social progress from one of the greatest philanthropists and dozens more inspiring changemakers. Hear their stories and lessons and see how they united to inspire change across the core institutions of society, breaking through the barriers of partisanship in the process. Believe in People is out now. Order the book today at believeinpeoplebook.com/problem solvers. Again, that is believeinpeoplebook.com/problem solvers. All right, we're back. So while John is trying to round up money to buy Movoto, he's also trying to work out a deal with Movoto. And this is complicated for a lot of reasons. First, the company's ownership is in Japan. And as John said, the culture there is very relationship oriented. John was actually going to fly to Japan to meet with the owners, but the flight was scheduled just as the pandemic was taking over the world. And John's wife was afraid that he might get stuck in Japan if the borders locked down. And that was reasonable, because that is exactly what would have happened had he gotten on the flight. Borders shut down about a week after he was supposed to go. And that wasn't the only part of John's plan that was falling apart. Remember how earlier in the episode, John said he wanted to keep this whole thing a secret? He wanted to try to buy Movoto without any other major players in the space realizing it, because he was a small player and could, like, probably easily get outspent by his larger competitors? Well, try as he might to keep this thing a secret.
What I found out later was, once I went in high intent, they did the thoughtful thing that all companies should do, which is explore other options. And so they started accelerating those options kind of through the end of the year and then into February, and had some big companies on the hook. I only kind of knew that at that point. It turns out there was very big companies deep down the process thinking about going to Japan, just like me.
You know what saved him? The pandemic. The other companies backed off once the world went topsy-turvy. Had the pandemic not arrived, John very well may not have gotten this deal, even if he had successfully hustled to get the money. Still, as John is pulling together the financing for this thing, he is also dealing with this.
I had to, by this time, to be clear, we didn't have the company in a definitive LOI. So I'm chasing money to buy a company that I don't have the right to buy still. And this company is very thoughtfully saying, you don't have the money to buy us. You seem very convinced you can buy us.
The best thing John could do was to be transparent with them and build trust. And that, in part, meant being very understanding of what the other side would want in an acquisition.
So this company was absentee-owned a big part. And what I knew is that the vision of these two companies would create massive outside value. And I wanted to make sure the team from that company was with me for the whole long haul. So I had to restructure ownership to give ownership in that company to their employees, and then make sure that we all owned the future company.
And as this is happening, the pandemic is worsening. And that means that a couple more things are actually going to go John's way. First, the price is dropping. It's hard to drive up your price when economies are being rocked. And then there's all that relationship building, which in normal times would have meant a lot of high-stakes meetings in Japan. But now...
And so we then moved this to Zoom meetings, midnight to bridge time zones. So they were at home. I was at home. Kind of nice, right? Everybody in the world's at home. So their kids are in the background. My kids are in the background. You can kind of lean into the uncertainty to build a relationship faster, to show your humanity. I think that was an interesting thing. It's hard to build a relationship in a boardroom. When you are in your house and you're like, kid busts in and the internet goes out, we all get to know each other a little bit more intimately. And I think that actually benefited us because they could see who John Berkowitz was. There was no, you know, there's no fancy boardrooms. There was no script I was reading. The kids were interrupting. And I think that actually accidentally helped us build trust.
Eventually, it came together. John showed the Japanese owners that he was legit and that he cared. And very importantly, that he had the money.
So we needed to get them on a definitive LOI, which happened kind of end of mid-May. And then we finalized the acquisition agreement with them and the fundraising docs, right? Same month. That's a lot of paperwork to do all at once, continuing to balance both sides. And then it all came together at the end of June. And then I gave the entire company the next week off. I got on a surfboard in Cocoa Beach where I was and paddled out and literally lost my mind. Just screamed at the top of my lungs. It was the most incredible PTSD scream I have ever done. I like to say in my head that I caught the wave back in. And I have no idea if I did. I probably busted my ass. But that was how I processed it. And then we all came back to work the week later. And we've been marching together ever since.
At the beginning of this episode, John said that had this not worked out, it could have been a death sentence for his company. And he's right. He'd gambled so much and had shifted his vision of the company so significantly that had it not all come together, it might not have been clear what Ojo Labs was. But the gamble paid off. And the most interesting thing, I think, is that it very well may have paid off only because of the pandemic. For all the stress it created, it forced new opportunities. It scared off competing offers. It made this deal look really interesting to his lead investor. It forced an unusual bond between him and owners half a world away. And this is what crisis can do for us. It can create opportunity where we least expect it. The best we can do then is just to make sure we're putting ourselves out there to discover what we had no idea we'd find. And that's our episode. If you like what you heard, please subscribe to Problem Solvers wherever you get your podcasts. We come out with a new episode every Monday morning and you don't want to miss it. And hey, be kind. Pass the show along to an entrepreneur friend who could use a boost. And did you solve a problem that would be good for this show? Let me know about it. Visit my website, jasonfeiffer.com, JasonFeiffer.com, where you can find my contact information and all sorts of other valuable info. Problem Solvers is a production of Entrepreneur Media. Be sure to visit entrepreneur.com for all your entrepreneurship needs. And even better, subscribe to our magazine, which is just full of the smartest entrepreneurs solving the toughest problems. My name is Jason Feiffer, the editor-in-chief of Entrepreneur Magazine. Thanks for listening. And hey, let's go solve some problems.